Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Red Fox Blogger with your host, Kel Fritzy. She's the infidel your imam warned you about, and there's no holding her back as she shares her opinions, insights, information, and outrage discussing the political entity known as Islam. We are at a critical juncture in our history, and if the threat of Islam is not faced up front, right now, then we will lose the freedoms of individuality, civic justice, and autonomy of thought we rightly enjoy, and instead see our values replaced with kinetic and civilizational jihad, Sharia law, and oppression permanently. Don't let the memory of our soldiers, past and present, go in vain. It is up to us to protect the legacy for which they fought so hard. We have an obligation to honor their memory today and for future generations. Join Kel Mondays at 3 p.m. Eastern and Fridays at 7 p.m. Eastern on Blog Talk Radio. But leave your political correctness well away from her phone lines and chat room. And be warned, Kel takes no prisoners.
JoeDanMedia.com.
Changes.
We are justified in doing anything we can to survive.
And good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Red Fox Blogger. I'm your humble host, Kel Fritzy, and I hope you're all having a great day. I'm having just a bloody fantastic day. Oh, let me tell you. I am the co-host and producer at English Defense League Radio, and we had our show. We taped our show earlier today. I was in the midst of delivering my contribution to the program, and my landline decided that it was going to collapse on me. Yes, Rogers Cable, I need to have a word with you. So I had to go into another browser, bring up a dummy account, get in there, and finish taping the show with Jeff and Agador and Tim and Tommy. And it was not fun. So I thought, well, I'm really worried that this might happen again while I'm taping my own show and I'm alone. So I thought, well, maybe I'll try the Skype thing again. So here I am. I'm in the studio, and I hit the skippity Skype, and it says, please enter your host PIN number. It's like, where the fuck do I enter the PIN number? So I'm typing in my PIN number on the Skype inbox. It's like, oh, okay, that's not working. So I'm trying to type it in the studio. No, that's not working. I'm sorry. We did not get the last four digits. So I'll try the landline. And so here I am on the landline. But you know what? If worse comes to worse, what I'm going to end up doing is that I'm going to have to do what I did with the Jeff's show today, and that's open up a new browser. Come in as Cal of RFB or something. But needless to say, it's just been a really maddening day. And yes, Vorp, I am on drugs, and it's a really good thing because I've had a hell of a day. Oh, boy. Oh, please, somebody pour me a scotch. I swear. This has been one of the worst days of my life when it comes to tech issues. Believe me, it has just been an absolute nightmare. It's just been terrible. And the live listeners, I hope you're enjoying yourself. I don't know. I might take this to Audacity and edit this out. But like I say, it was so bad I got punch drunk. I couldn't even do the show properly with Jeff and the gang. It was just a nightmare. I had 14 million pages open. I had the Skype open. And oh my God, it was just unreal. And oh, poor drugs and booze. She's losing control. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yep. I'm telling you. I wish I were, you know, capable of drowning my sorrows, as it were, but I can't do that. But hey, you know what? That's enough of me. Come on, you know. It's Easter, and I hope everybody's having a wonderful Easter. Jesus got his nails done today. What, too soon? Okay. I'm really, really going to stop it and get serious. And I apologize if I offend anybody. It's just been not a very good day for the old Matt Fox here. So there you go. But we do. We are celebrating a high holy holiday. And I am a little perturbed that the Muslims are stepping in all over it again. They do this every single time. They step in on our Christmas. They step in on our Easter. They step in on everything. But you know what? I want to explain to you exactly what is Easter. You know, like bar none, that Easter is the single most important holy day of the Christian church. We know that. It celebrates the resurrection of Jesus Christ, which will happen this Sunday. And that, of course, is we have Good Friday and Easter Monday. My apologies. And it's the central event in Christianity. Now, to Christians, the resurrection, it backs up Jesus' claim that he had the authority to die for the sins of the world and the power to come back to life again. It also gives hope to Christians that they too will experience a resurrected life in heaven. This is very, very important to me. Easter is my holiday. This is, to me personally as a Christian, this is a very important holiday. The exact day of the year that Easter falls, it can be confusing, but the logic seems pretty old-fashioned in the digital age. It's based on the lunar calendar and tied to the start of the solar spring. But the Western Church, Catholic and Protestant, continues to observe it based on the rules of long ago, that it falls on the first Sunday after the first full moon after March 21st, which is the vernal equinox. It can't come before March 22nd nor after April 25th. In contrast, Orthodox churches wanted to tie Easter to a Jewish Passover, given the relationship between Passover and the day of Christ's resurrection. Because the Jewish calendar determines the date that Jews celebrate Passover, Easter to Orthodox churches can vary by as much as 5 weeks from the Western Church. Now, no one knows for certain where the term Easter came from, but one theory is that it's derived from the Anglo-Saxon goddess Ystor, who connected with fertility and spring and tied it all together. If so, Christians named their high holy day Easter, aiming to replace the pagan celebration of spring with their own holiday, like they did with Christmas. Easter is also often known as Pesach, which comes from the Hebrew word Pesach, meaning Passover. Some Protestants prefer to call it simply Resurrection Day, which I do, to remove the commercialized baggage that they see associated with Easter. Now, in addition, the Easter Bunny has pagan origins and has no real connection with the Christian celebration, although some churches use eggs as a metaphor for the new life Christians receive because of the resurrection. Now, this holiday is very important to me, and I don't consider it a holiday, actually. I consider it a high observance. I observe Easter because of the resurrection of Jesus Christ. I take it lightly. When I began the show, I took it a little lightly, but believe me, the resurrection of Jesus Christ is the most important observance to me personally. And the Easter Bunny and all that is all very well and good, but we have to remember what exactly Easter is all about. Jesus Christ died on the cross for us, and he was resurrected 3 days later. And so we keep that in mind. I am getting a little pissed off, though, because the Muslims are stepping all over it again, in that we have the, like I say, we do. We have the Easter Bunny. Okay, you know, the kids like it. I mean, come on, who doesn't like an Easter egg hunt? You know, Sunday morning, come on, why not? You know, it's good fun. And we go out there and we get the treats and have our little chocolate and stuff like that. But what is really annoying me is the issue of halal when it comes to one of the holidays that mean the most to me, and that I cannot enjoy my little Cadbury cream eggs because Muslims decided that they're going to slap Cadbury with a halal tax. And so when you go to the market and you're buying your little Easter eggs, Cadbury and so on and so forth, you are buying halal product. And that bothers me greatly. I am sick and tired of the Muslims messing about with our high holidays. They just won't leave us alone. I'm disturbed by that. Christmas, for example. Halal turkeys, butterball turkeys. We all love our turkey Christmas time and, of course, Easter time. And you go to the supermarket and you buy a butterball turkey only to discover it is halal. Why are these Muslims stepping all over us? Why are they not leaving our traditions alone? Why do they insist on butting themselves into everything we do, everything we celebrate, everything we revere. Why are they doing this? I have no idea. But you know what? I have somebody here that totally backs up what I'm saying.
Time for an unpleasant blind guy conservative bite. Every Cadbury product you buy comes with a special surprise.
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar.
That's right. Cadbury is halal. Halal funnels money to Islamic terrorists. Spread the word. Less money for Cadbury means your friends might see another Easter.
And bingo.
This has been an unpleasant blind guy conservative bite.
See what I mean? They come after everything we celebrate. This is Easter. This is our holiday. This is our high holy observance. And they still crap all over it on us. Because I see it every single day, it seems. Do you know that you can't even go to the supermarket without something being halal? And do you know that halal products are not labeled? They used to be. Campbell's Soups and Kraft Dinner and Schweppes Ginger Ale and all those products, they used to have the little ISNA insignia on them. And that would apprise you that you're a halal product. And that would, you as a consumer, give you a choice not to purchase that product. Well, they have since removed that insignia. Now, if you pick up a can of soup, Campbell's, or if you pick up a Cadbury's chocolate bar, you do not know whether it's halal or not. So, yeah. And I want to thank Agador very much for that clip. And Agador is actually going to be joining me in a few moments. But I just want to try the best I can to not get my indignities in the way and override what exactly Easter is all about and what Passover is all about and what the resurrection is all about. But we wish our Jewish neighbors and friends a happy Passover. And Passover is both the most celebrated Jewish holiday of the year and the holiday voted most likely to elicit a groan, unfortunately, because people groan when they consider Passover's dietary requirements. Yeah, those people eat funny. They groan when they think of all the preparations. They even groan when they remember how much they overate during Passover of last year. But I have so many Jewish friends, and yeah, they do. It's like, oh, my God, I got to do this. And they literally have to clean the house top to bottom, throw out the old flour, throw out the old milk, throw this out, throw that out, get this in, cook this, cook that. So, yeah, I can, like my Jewish girlfriend in particular, I talk with her, and she's like, oh, God, Kel, don't talk to me. I'm too busy. It's like, what are you doing? It's Passover. Ah, say no more. But it's true. This is the most celebrated Jewish holiday, and they do. They sure do it up well. And thing behind the Passover is that in some ways this is exactly what you're supposed to feel this time of year, because Passover is a celebration of spring, a birth and rebirth, of a journey from slavery to freedom, of taking responsibility for yourself, the community, and the world. Now, however, this is strangely enough, none of this taking a responsibility gets done without the groaning. It was the groaning that the Hebrews expressed the pain of their ancient enslavement in Egypt more than 3,000 years ago. And it's with the groaning that they called attention to their plight. So groan already. Come on, guys. Now, The Torah states that Jews are to observe Passover for 7 days, beginning on the 15th of the Jewish month of Nisan, which is usually in April. Now, the first night always includes a special seder, or ritual dinner. Plus, traditional Jewish people outside of Israel don't work on either the first or two or the last 2 days of the seven-day period. Outside of Israel, Jews celebrate a second seder on the second night of Passover. You can think of Passover as honoring the renewal of the sun. It's always the first full moon after the vernal equinox, or a time to step firmly into springtime. You can also think of Passover as celebrating the Jewish people's birth certificate and declaration of independence. Or you can think of it as memorizing something that God did for the Jews over 3,000 years ago. Now, however, to make any celebration or ritual truly meaningful, you must find a way to make it personal. Even Moses and later the rabbis of the Talmud recognized that when they instructed the Jewish people how to celebrate Passover, the key isn't only to tell the story of Exodus or even to compare your life to the story of Exodus, but to actually personalize the history. Feel the feelings and experience this, and also engage in the sensations of a journey. In this way, the Jewish people as individuals and as a people moved forward. Everything a person does during Passover aids this process. Jewish people have four Hebrew names for Passover, each pointing to a particular aspect of the holiday. The most common Hebrew name is Pesach, which is usually translated as passing over, as the angel of death passed over the homes of the Jews in Egypt. Killing the Egyptian firstborn was the 10th plague, and it convinced the Pharaohs to release the Hebrews from slavery. But there are three more Hebrew names for Passover: Chag El Masoth, Festival of Unleavened Bread; Zeman Shirin Tinu, the Time of Liberation; and Chag Aviv, Festival of Spring. And I probably butchered those phraseologies terribly, but my Jewish friends love me, and I know they'll forgive me, and that they know that my heart is in the right place. So on this highest of holy holidays, I wish everybody not only a happy Easter, but a happy Passover and a happy Resurrection Day coming up in 3 days. And with that, I'm going to bring my friend on here, and I want to talk with him about what was going on when he put this Cadbury's Halal special together, which I played for you. And hi, Agador, how are you?
I'm very good, Kel. It's been a long time since we've spoken.
It's been so long.
Yeah. Okay, what was I thinking of? This came about because Tim Burton was talking about how we need to get the message out about the truth surrounding halal, not just halal, but Islam altogether. But we have to take it, bite at a time. And he was talking about this and talking about using satire and fun and things like that to get the message out. So, and I think I put in the chat room at that moment, you know, somebody should do a video about this, because I imagined the Cadbury Bunny as seen in America, in the United States and in Canada, you know, just, you know, bopping along and then, you know, laying a big bomb. And that's where this all came out from. I couldn't do a video, but I could do an audio, and that's where it came from. And I just hope that this kind of thing can be used to help people, to help people get the word out.
And I think it's necessary that we do, because one thing is that what really disturbs me is the infiltration of our Judeo-Christian holidays with the Muslims, and that they just feel that they can step all over the place. And we can't even have our Easter eggs without them being declared halal. Muslims do not celebrate Easter, do not celebrate Christmas. However, they insist that our celebratory products be labeled halal. And it cost us a fortune, actually, to do this. And I say to people, if you listen to Mike Holt of Restore Australia on Wednesdays, believe me, ask him a question about halal, and he will sit you down for, like, hours and explain it to you. because he is the person behind, well, he's the chairman of Restore Australia, and he is the person behind the Halal sticker campaign. And if you look up in the show slides every once in a while, you'll see Stop Halal and or Halal Food Funds Terrorism. That is Mike Holt's sticker campaign. And, you know, Agador, I just get so very frustrated that I can't even go to my local market. I can't even buy a turkey without knowing if it's halal certified or not. And so this is pretty much how I'm centering the show, this segment of the show anyway, around that, in that enough is enough. We have a right to know if we're consuming halal product. And everybody knows how I feel about halal product, especially when it comes to livestock, because we know how the livestock is slaughtered. And that at least, you know, the Jewish people, they always... I'm going to come up for air in a minute, Agador, but I just got to get this point in and drive it home, is that people say, well, what's the difference between halal slaughter and kosher slaughter? Well, there's a big difference. Kosher slaughter has evolved, in which the animals are stunned. Halal slaughter does not stun the animals. Kosher slaughter, they do not march all these animals into one room and start slaughtering them with other animals right there in the room. Halal does that. They herd all the animals in and start slaughtering, and all the animals are dying in mortal fear, literally mortal fear. So when people ask me what's the difference between kosher and halal, those are two big points that I can bring to the table and explain to them. And so everybody understands why I have an issue with halal, and thus should you. Agador, what do you think about that?
Well, okay. Now, there's a reason people pay so much, for instance, for Kobe beef, and it's because it's treated so well. If you want to really ruin the taste of, you know, cattle, turkeys, whatever, sure, yeah, go ahead and do that and let the animals see each other, you know, feel the terror that each other are experiencing when you slaughter them, that kind of thing. I mean, that just ruins it on a taste level. Yeah, I noticed Paul Alexander put in the chat box here that you know, the response from the taqiya artists about Cadbury is Cadbury has a standard letter for people who complain about their halal certification, which says they have been assured by the Australian Federation of Islamic Councils, which issues halal certification, that it is not used for terroristic purposes. The money is not used for terroristic purposes. It goes to halal. Now, we have to remember our Tim Burtonisms here. You know, these people are using taqiyya. In fact, they have permission from the Quran to lie to people if it advances the cause of Islam, and getting money certainly advances anyone's cause. So I don't believe anything that this statement says whatsoever. It's from a bunch of taqiyya mongers, and as you said, all right, it's food, but it's not just food. I mean, it's not just Cadbury and Kraft and things like that. You know, it's also other personal hygiene products. I mean, it's Colgate toothpaste. That's the one that you said that I remembered. But there are also soaps and body washes and things like that. You know, this is all part. I see this as all part of the scheme, seemingly that Islamists get into. They insinuate their culture into every aspect of life and move in and pressurize it until everything else is removed and pushed out. And the only thing that's left is them and their culture. Ask any Christians, if you can find any left in Lebanon, about that.
Exactly. And that's it. They infiltrate our everyday lives. Yeah. It's amazing. I go to the supermarket and I pick up a tube of Colgate, only to discover that it's halal certified. And I wish that I had Mike Holt's packet of stickers so I could go around and say, warning, you're buying a halal product. But like I say, Agador. They don't label them anymore. And I like a point that Vorpalbite brought up in the chat room, in which he says slaughter is slaughter. I agree, Vorp, absolutely. But Vorp is just offended that he's being served, that Muslims have prayed over. Yes, that bothers me. And the idea of sitting down to eating my Easter turkey, knowing that a Muslim prayed over it, does not sit well with me at all either. It's a religiosity behind it as well.
It's a kind of cultural ethnic cleansing is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when you want to do this, I mean, they've been at this stuff for 1,400 years. We have to remember. So they're really good at it. And they approach it from every possible angle. They make it to where there is no escape. And they target everything, and they want to replace everything with Islam. And that's the point that even progressives listening to this program should understand. They want to replace the culture that you've worked for 100 years with Islam. Yeah. Just check out Sharia and just imagine what would happen to all those rights that you've fought for over 100 years for women, gays, other minorities. Just imagine what will happen if the current civilization in the West is replaced with Islam and Sharia. It ain't going to be fun. And now I don't want to go on too long, Kel, but I'll just say this very, very quickly. The main thrust of my show that I do, The Unpleasant Blind Guy, report on YouTube,
mm-hmm.
is I've been a client of the state. Don't be a client of the state. You won't like it. And you certainly won't like it under Islam.
No, absolutely. Absolutely, you won't. And, ladies and gentlemen, Agador has his own radio program that you can view on YouTube. And I encourage you to go to YouTube and look up The Unpleasant Blind Guy, because I wish that your shows were longer.
I think more people listen to them because they're shorter, because there's so many good ones like yours here, Cal, and so many others, too many to mention, and people just don't have the time. So, and I kind of came into it late, so it's nice. I try to keep them under half an hour, under 15 minutes if I can manage it, and there you go. I hope people will check them out, but... No, this is a very important subject, the subject of halal. That's why I did a conservative bite on it. And I also want to thank, if he's listening in the archives, I want to thank Gulp Dogs, because he did a wonderful job on the image for my conservative bite thing. It was really excellently well done. Thank you, Gulp Dogs.
And, that is the issue with me, of course. And like I say, Easter is a very important holiday to me. So when... I see things that our products are being halal treated. It just drives me absolutely crazy. That Gulf Dogs did a wonderful job with your logo, and I'm going to put the link in the chat room right now so everybody can click onto it. But this is what Gulf Dogs did for Agador, folks. Take a look at this.
It's
and
very
I just
nice,
put the
yeah.
link. There you go. But it does. It bothers me. I don't understand how it is that everywhere Muslims go, everything turns to rust. And Bigfoot brought up a really good point in the chat room, too, is that he used to find quite a few Lebanese Christians, and that is becoming a thing of the past. Lebanon was such a beautiful country. My apologies, not Tel Aviv, I was going to say, but Beirut was considered the Middle East jewel. It was the Paris of the Middle East, and it's just gone now. When Lebanon was inhabited by Christians and majority Christians, Lebanon, places like Lebanon, Egypt, Syria, all these wonderful places, Iran, all these wonderful places that were inhabited with Christians and Christian majority, it's gone. It's all over. Everywhere that Islam is, everything turns to rust. Lebanon is totally gone. Egypt is trying to revive itself in terms of bringing itself back and getting rid of the Muslim Brotherhood. But it is just a shame when you see these countries, what Afghanistan looked like in the 1950s, and women dressed rather smartly. They looked like 1950s university women that you would see in the United States. Now they're covered in these hefty bags, and they wear the niqab now. And the morality police that are in Iran and all these places, it's just everywhere Islam goes, everything turns to rust, and it's disturbing to me.
Well, it should disturb anyone who has looked at how far civilization has traveled in the past 14 years and how far it has not traveled for the Islamists. I mean, the only thing they know is consume other societies. That seems to be their one and only imperative, and it really hasn't changed in 1,400 years, as you say, stuck on stupid since the 7th century.
Yep.
You know, I mean, you talk about Beirut. In maybe about 1970 or 1973 even, Beirut would be completely unrecognizable from, you know, just a bomb-cratered crap hole it is today.
Yeah.
You know, Islam. And I'm not talking about what they call themselves Muslims, because that makes race baiters think I'm denigrating brown people. Bull. Islam is what destroys civilization and replaces it with itself. And you know, you see that in every country that they have moved into and taken over and just turned into dung heaps because of their barbaric outlook on life and the way they and their culture of slavery, pain, and just plain evil.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And that is something, like, I mean, I can espouse this until the cows come home, and I do this several times a week, as you know, ladies and gentlemen. I do several shows on several different networks, and I espouse this. This is my premise, and that. I do. I try to bring it home, and I try to pound it into people that there is a real, real problem. We have the civilizational jihad. We have the legal jihad. Of course, the legal jihad became personal, not only with me, but it became personal with you and Agador and Jeff Mitchell of EDL Radio. It became very personal because they went after Tim Burton. And so this is how close, like, it used to be maybe second, 2 degrees of separation, 6 degrees of separation, let's go that further out. But this was 1 degree of separation, and that they affected our very own Tim Burton when Fayez Magal of Tell Mama took him to a task, and he was actually charged by the police, the West Midlands police, and we had to endure his trial. This is how close it's getting to us, people. This is disgusting, and their tentacles can reach out so far and affect us, and it does. It affects us. We're a family here, and you're going after our friends? Like, Agador, I'm telling you, I really don't want you bailing me out of jail.
Well, that's good, because I got no damn money anyway.
Oh, yeah, but this is so totally correct. This is what they do, in that they totally encompass our westernized values. They won't even have our own little Easter here.
Oh, no, it can't. Oh, okay, as I said, nothing can be ours. You know, it all has to have their imprint on it. I was just reminded of, have you ever seen the movie, Kel, Extremities? Have you ever seen that movie?
I don't believe I have.
Okay, it stars Farrah Fawcett, and it's about a woman that is being pursued by a man who raped her and was released. I mean, he didn't get a long jail sentence or anything like that, and then he got released. And, you know, just every once in a while in this movie, in the first part of the movie, you know, he would call her, or you know, she would find him looking in her window, or something of that. What we call today stalking. You know, that was before the term became popular. And that is what halal is like. Halal, you know, says, all right, we've blown some of you up, we've killed some of you, we've raped some of you, and guess what? We're here. Oh, you want to buy some nice Easter stuff? Here we are. You want to buy some Christmas stuff? Here we are. Oh, we're here, and we're not going away. That's really what it's about. It's also cultural intimidation, is what it comes up to, in my opinion.
And that is exactly it, and that's what Islam is doing. They're peeking through our windows, and the thing is, though, Egador, is that they're not even hiding the fact that they're peeking in our windows. They're not.
No, they don't. I mean, this is if you read the if you read the explanatory memorandum for the Muslim Brotherhood in the United States, they say openly what they want. And this is and what is really scary to me is that our own media looks at this and ignores it. It's right there. It's right there, plain as day for anyone to see. They want to replace, for instance, in the States, they want to replace our government, our society with Islam and Sharia. And it's the same in Canada, it's the same in the UK, it's the same in Australia, it's the same everywhere in the West, it's the same everywhere in the world. They're trying it in Russia, but, you know, Putin is, he's stepping on it with a heavy jackboot, you know, even to the point where he doesn't mind if a couple of hundred Russians who aren't Islamists get killed, you know, just to take out one sniper, he doesn't care. You know, but it's everywhere. It's everywhere, and they're not giving up. And the best thing we can do is inform people about it. And as Paul Alexander said in the chat box, you know, maybe not do boycotts, but do boycotts. You know, go and find products that aren't halal and buy those and support those businesses and say, hey, you know, if you're not halal, you're all right with us, and we're going to deal with you.
And the thing is that they get around it so handily, and that they get themselves elected. They start out in local office, and they garner their bona fides, and they move up into in Canada, for example. They may become a mayor of Calgary, like we have right now, and they get their bona fides, and they start working for the Liberal Party of Canada. And maybe they're running for a provincial position. They get their bona fides. And then they start running for federal politics. And the next thing you know is that the Canadian Parliament is stacked with Muslims who have the vote. It's the vote that scares me. I always say, Agador, that we can deal with the kinetic jihad. We can deal with the bombers because we know they're there and we can take them out. But it's the civilizational jihad that scares me the most. And the way I see it, when I listen to programs like yours and you're talking about Cadbury's, it's like that, once again, civilizational and stealth jihad. We don't even know what products we're consuming, which are halal. I don't even know what we're having our Easter supper on Sunday with the family, and I have a turkey. I know it's not halal, but I know that butterball is halal, but other people don't. Like, most people do not know what products they're consuming which are halal, but they do. They just sneak their way in, and it is so stealthy. And what I was, just to bring it back full circle and tie it up in a neat little bow, is the political end in that they do seek office within our Western institutions, which is very, very ironic because they do not believe in man-made law and they do not believe in our constitutions. However, when it suits them fine in order for them to carry on with the caliphate, all of a sudden, gee, that constitution looks pretty good. I'm going to run for mayor now.
Well, yeah, and you see this going on in the United States of America as well, and it's rampant in the UK. But in the States here, you know, it's going on in Dearborn, Michigan, and it's going on in other places. And what they'll do, they'll have a very similar technique. They'll register themselves as Democrats, and go on with the taqiyya. Oh, we're just a peaceful religion and that kind of thing. And anyone who's against us just hates brown people and people different from them, and they're you know, Islamophobes and that sort of thing. And of course, the Democratic Party here in the States, just as the Labor Parties all over the world, are more than happy to use anything they can to get what they think they want. Difference is, this is the vital bit that we have to push out there. Difference is, the end result is not going to be what they want. The end result is going to be the exact opposite of what they want. If they think that conservatives in any of our countries are bad, they ain't seen nothing until they've seen what the Islamists will do.
And they're fooling, they're absolutely shielding, well, they're not shielding themselves, they're out and out fooling themselves. And that we have this mayor in Calgary, and he is, he's an Ahmadi Muslim is what he calls himself. And he is really making himself out to be quite a little bit of a hero. And people just adore this guy because, for example, Alberta had a really, really bad storm last year, and they had flooding and everything. And his name is Naheed Nejshi, the mayor of Calgary. And he was touted as being the hardest working mayor in Canada because, he stayed up for 72 hours and he was helping the people of Calgary. And he made a name for himself. But he's an Ahmadi Muslim, which is kind of funny because Ahmadis are considered heretics within the realm of Islam, especially when you talk to a Sunni or a Shiite. The Ahmadis are heretics. But he still believes in that little Quran. He was sworn into office with the Quran, and he is following the dictates of the Quran, but he's a big old hero there in the city of Calgary. And he's, like I say, building bona fides, Agador, building bona fides. And I have you right here with me, and I'm going to tell you first off the bat, and you're the first to hear it, is that, mark my words, this guy will be running for the Liberal Party of Canada within the next 2 years. Just mark my words.
Oh, I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it. And, you know, everything you say, you know what I kept thinking of? I kept thinking of Hamas in the Middle East.
Yep.
Because Hamas does not just fund kinetic jihad. You're right about the importance of civilizational jihad. They don't just fund kinetic jihad. They go into the neighborhoods and they spend some of the petrodollars that they have on the population, you know, giving them little handouts, giving them little bits of welfare and things like that. So, oh, no, we're not thugs with guns. We're the good guys. You know, they remind me a lot of Al Capone in Chicago back in the day, you know, handing out free milk and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they use these exact same techniques, and sadly, on too many people, they work.
And that's exactly what they do, and they come across as so benevolent. What really floors me is when they wrap up their Ramadan ding dong. Oh, my apologies, ladies and gentlemen. That would be Ramadan, and they wrap it up, and they have all these street fests, and they're feeding the homeless, and they're feeding anybody that comes along that needs a meal. And they have these little celebrations, and look how great we are, and we're a wonderful, peaceful religion, and we just finished up our Ramadan, and so we're going to celebrate with you. And they have all these outreach programs going on. Meanwhile, all I can see, when I look in the national dailies, Agador, for example, and I see the photographs of the smiling Muslima passing out a plate of food to that hungry man who has been living on the streets for years, all I can think of is you are a bloody nothing but a wolf in sheep's clothing. If I were in England and if I were Jeff, it would be a wolf in lamb's clothing. But that's all I see. I can see right through these people, and I don't even consider them people. They're inbred Quranimals as far as I'm concerned. But this is what they do. Agador, you're right on the money with this. This is what they do. Oh, look at us. We're so wonderful, and we help our fellow man, and you're our friends, you're our neighbors. No, you're not. What you are is that you're Islamist, and you create no-go zones, and you do not interact. And when you have to interact, it's by force, and it kills these car animals to want to interact, but they have to do it because that's part of the caliphate, that's part of the taqiyya, and that they have to have a certain presentation. It looks good. It looks good on paper. It looks good in the media.
Well, yeah, that's true. I mean, do you really think, for instance, that Huma Abedin? I don't know exactly how to pronounce her first name.
Huma Abedin.
Do you really think that she wants to be wearing Western dress and all of this when she glues herself to Hillary Clinton, which is just scary as all hell as far as I'm concerned?
Yeah.
No, she doesn't. But she does it for the advancement of the cause of Islam. You can commit what would ordinarily be considered a sin if that sin is committed against people who basically aren't even people. And that's where their heads are at. That's where the notion of kafir comes in. You know, we are kafir, and therefore, as being kafir, we're not even people. And I want to say that they're very slick about this. While I was putting together the conservative bite I did, I was looking for someone yelling Allahu Akbar, and I came across something called it's called Ramadan TV. This was a British cable program that they were running, I guess, last Ramadan. And some guy calls in and he converts to Islam on air. And, you know, I mean, I'm almost throwing up in my mouth. But at the same time, I'm looking at this and I'm looking at these two guys who were sitting there in the studio, you know, welcoming this guy to Islam. And here's the insidious thing, Kel. I felt it. I felt the loving welcome of Islam. Now, I knew what was behind it, but I thought to myself, what impression must this give to people who don't see the end result, who don't see the Sharia patrols and don't see the rape gangs and don't see the human slavery that goes on, and don't see the female genital mutilation and all the other evils that Sharia brings? What can this not be doing to them as far as influence goes? They're very good at this, and it's very real.
Oh, absolutely. And you were describing, it's almost like sulfur. You can taste it in the back of your throat. And you brought up Huma Abedin, and I just put something in the chat room. And what Huma Abedin is doing is that she's practicing what is called kitman, and that is the act of paying lip service to authority while holding personal opposition. It is a sort of political camouflage for the purpose of survival in circumstances where open opposition would result in persecution. This woman holds such high authority, and she's the one who's married to Anthony Weiner as well, isn't she?
Oh yeah, and
who's a Jew?
Yeah, exactly.
Who's a Jew?
I know. Yeah. Well, hey, it's all in the cause of Islam, and let's not forget Valerie Jarrett. Now, I don't know if she's openly Islamist, but you know, let's face it. If in the last American administration, the vice president pulled the President Bush's strings as a puppeteer, Valerie Jarrett has got President Obama by the short and curlies, to be delicate, and it's obvious that she's at the very least an Islamist sympathizer. So yes, this is something. It's right out in the open, but there are so many people who are so concerned with political correctness that either they don't see it or more dangerously, they don't want to see it.
And that is exactly it. And Valerie Jarrett, Obama never goes anywhere without her. Nowhere. He goes nowhere without her. Obama doesn't even bend his elbows unless she tells him to. Like, she says jump, and he always says how high. And this woman is one of his confidants? Like, that's frightening to me. I believe it's Valerie Jarrett, whose mother was actually in charge of a chapter in the middle. I can't remember where they're from. They're from somewhere. I can't remember off the top of my head, but somewhere in the Middle East, and that the mother was a leader of a chapter of the Muslim Sisterhood.
I thought that was Huma Abedin.
Was that Abedin? Yeah. Oh, okay. You know what? Can we interchange these two? Because they all come back to the same common denominator. They're Muslims, and they're engaging in taqiyya and kitman, and they're determined that they are going to change our political landscape.
Oh, yeah.
I think we can agree on that.
Oh, we absolutely can. You know, everything that the EDL talks about that goes on with David Cameron over in the UK is happening in our White House here with our president. It's difficult to get in the mind of President Obama because he throws up such a public mask that's protected by so many people. But you almost have to wonder if he isn't being led into these things. We know that a lot of his education was Islamic as a young man.
Growing up
as a kid. So we really don't know what's in his head. All we can do is here in the States, and all you guys can do there in Canada, and all they can do there in other parts of the world, is look at the results. Look at what's going on now. Look at what laws have been passed. Look at what public statements these people have made. And they can make their assessments based on that.
Well, people won't, though. Like, the populace won't. And that when we try to educate the public about what is going on within their political realms, they don't pay attention. All they care about is Obama money and free phones. And we get the underinformed voter. That's what we end up with.
Well, and Vorobyte, also brought up a statement that, pretty much basically saying that, Obama is working with Islamists and they're working with socialists. And this is what I've been saying for a while now.
Yeah.
Islam has been chosen by statists to be an official religion. Even though it's not a religion, it's been chosen to be an official religion because through it, you can exercise a lot of control over people. You have secular control through the government, and you have cultural and religious control through Islam. And don't think that statists and Islamists would not use each other and complement each other in order to achieve their separate goals. Even in the end, what Islamists might possibly tell the statists that aren't Islamists is, hey, keep your mouth shut and you'll be rich. And if you don't, you can already see what we're doing to the people.
Yeah, absolutely. And that if the people realize exactly what they were going to be hit with and what their children would have to endure, they would certainly have a resurrection of their own and say that, no, we're not putting up with this. But it's not happening. We're dealing with a sleeping public. That's what we're dealing with. And people, I only do this humble little radio show to give you homework and hope that I generate conversation around the water cooler. This is why Jeff does his show. This is why Vito Esposito. This is why all of the folks on Radio Jihad Network does the show. That's why Tim Burton does his show at Liberty GB. And that is why we have people like Paul Weston of Liberty GB running for office with the platform involves the issue of Islam within the United Kingdom, for example. But we still have quite a battle on our hands in that the public is so fast asleep, we can't wake them up, Agador.
Well, no, I don't know that the public is too far gone yet. And this may be the thing that saves civilization, at least for this period of time, because it is a characteristic of all people like Islamists that when they begin to see the end of their goal, They can't wait. They have to begin, you know, tightening that grip, you know, because evil requires that they do it. And this is where we could help to save our civilizations is by informing people of what the end game is. I think the EDL radio is doing that. I think people like, you know, Gotti Edelman and Vito Esposito and people like that are doing that here in the States. And Mike Holt's doing it in Australia. You're doing it in Canada. You know, and we're just going to have to keep this up. We're just going to have to keep it up and keep spreading the truth until we can't spread the truth anymore.
And I'm just putting a link in the chat room. Flycatch brought up a really good point about a university in the United States saying that there are too many white students, and that is Western Washington. That might be something, if you want to stay with me, Agador, that would be great. But what I want to do is that we're at the top of the hour, and I want to take a quick break so that people can refresh their coffees, their teas, their cocktails. Hey, it's Friday night, folks. Come on. But be mindful. It's also Good Friday, so behave yourselves. But I'm going to take this break, and we're going to see you back here in 3.5 minutes. And, Agador, you'll want to hang around because this is actually something I got from you. So we'll see everybody back here in a moment, or 3.5.
Right.
welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Red Fox Blogger. I'm your humble host, Cal Fritzy, and Agador is joining me this evening. We want to thank you for being here. Agador, I want to thank you for being here, and we want to thank everybody who's joining us in the chat room, and that's A12 Iggy Mom, and, of course, Bigfoot, COG, Child of God, Cat, Flycatch. We have a guest here, and that might be Terry. I'm not too sure. We have Paul Alexander, who made my F-bomb sign for me. If you go up and look into the show slides, you'll see the F-bomb show, and Paul made that for me. So thank you, Paul. We have Annie of Southern Sense is Conservative Sense, and we have Burplebite. We have people listening on other devices, and we will have people listening in archive later. And we appreciate all of you, but we especially appreciate the people in our chat room right here, right now, because you're taking time out of your valuable day to spend with us. And Agador, I think that is just fantastic. Now, I want you to explain exactly why we played that song. Why Don't Ride the White Horse? Why is that?
Well, this just came into my head when you guys were talking about Muhammad and his white horse, and I just thought about that, and that song popped into my head, and it's fun. So there you go.
And it's perfect too. Yeah, you know what? We'll just ride the pony.
Well,
I
yeah.
I had a few thoughts going through my head with that one.
If it's not racist, you know, we can just, you know, we can ride the black stallion.
Exactly. Burplebite, he actually, he's got it right. When you ride the right horse, that's a reference to drug use. Absolutely.
Yep.
But
yep.
I like the way that we played on it, and that Muhammad, yep, he rode a white horse, so we do not want to ride the white horse. There are so many metaphors in there. We could go on all day with it. Oh,
well, yeah, you know, Islam is
like
a
Denzel Washington.
There you go. Yeah, Islam is like a drug too, and you know, it has all the good feeling effects of a drug, and it has all the bad effects of drugs as well. So there you are.
Oh yeah, Islam is. There are some very nice drugs out there, I'm sure. Like, I don't know. I don't do drugs. I just play somebody who pretends that she does when she does her radio show, because when you listen to the beginning of my program, I'm usually all over the map, freaking out about my landlines and trying to do a show on, EDL radio and freaking out. So I just pretend I play one on drugs when I come here. But, no, I don't do drugs, and I don't, Okay, I'm going to stop it right there before I dig myself any deeper and totally lose my impromptu co-host. I think I can refer to him. But, who brought this up in the chat room? I just want to stop the scroll and go back. And, everybody was dancing. I think it was... All right, who put this link in the chat room? It was Flycatch. Flycatch put this in here, and that he alluded to the university, and that their campus is too white. And Paul Alexander, do you do nicotine or alcohol, Cal? No, I'll do alcohol tomorrow. That's my only day off, and I'll probably sit around and have a beer with my husband. But no, I don't do alcohol during the week or anything like that. I wish I did, though, Agador.
Well, of course you'll have a beer. You're Canadian, eh?
Hey, you know what? If you don't like hockey and you don't like beer, you're not Canadian, eh? Come on, you know, what's wrong with you? Come on, get out of there. Burplebite, Cal lies. Earlier today, she was boozing while popping her pills.
Nice.
Oh,
no, you probably just wished you were boozing and popping pills at that point. But I got to say, Cal, you did a really fantastic job that time.
Take off, you hoser.
There you go.
No, I was born naturally crazy. Ladies and gentlemen, I implore you that... please put up with me. But yeah, this story, like, I have so many stories I could go through, Agador. It's just unbelievable. I have stories all over the place, but this one that Flycatch put in the chat room. He put the proposal in the chat room, and I put the link in there. And oh, Bigfoot! Up here in Canada, we have some good beaver and lots of it.
Let's see, note to myself, immigrate to Canada immediately. Okay. Get right on that. Now, Kel, you were talking about Western Washington University. Someone I know who graduated from there calls the place woo-woo. Yeah, and this story came out last week, and what the guy said was, if we are just as white, if our student population is just as white in, you know, X number of years, then we will be a failure as a university. Now, I see that as not only just the regular academic political correctness gone nuts. I mean, you know, I almost see that as a form of ethnic cleansing. This whole race baiting movement here in the States and in other countries too, because, you know, Cameron was talking about how there are too many white faces in the United Kingdom. It's almost as if, and I said this on the EDL show, in the 60s, we were being taught to be proud of who we are and to look at other people for who they are, not what they are. But now it seems to be all about racially leveling the playing field. And if there are too many of one color around, especially if it's white, then it's bad. You know, this is the sort of thing that can also move into Takiya, or things like Halal. It is somehow being ashamed of who we are based on color. This is something that I think a lot of people just kind of got rid of in themselves 30-odd years ago. And here are these people bringing it back again to use racism for their own ends. And personally, I think it's disgusting.
Oh, I do too. And I'm just reading this article, and this is from the Washington Times. And I'm reading a quote in here, Agador, and it says, "How do we make sure that in future years we are not as white as we are today?" And this is a questionnaire put up by the state-funded school. And this was asked by the college watchdog website called Campus Reform Reported. This is disgusting. And the school's president, his name is Bruce Shepherd. He has been open about the goal, stating that in the university's 2012 opening convocation, every year from this stage and at this time, you have heard me say that if in decades ahead, we are as white as we are today, we will be a failed university. Ladies and gentlemen, I am repeating that to you for your total edification. The school president, his name, Bruce Shepherd, saying, every year from this stage and at this time, you have heard me say that if in decades ahead we are as white as we are today, we will have failed as a university. What is this? And what the hell is campus reform anyway? They repeated they reported that the sentiment had been echoed in a number of convocation speeches in which the campus's whiteness is seen as evidence of quote unquote failure. My God.
Oh, it is disgusting. I mean, what will move us all forward is people's ability to have an equal shot, yes, but then you have to begin rewarding people based on how much work they've done and how hard they've worked and what they can bring to the table. And this includes, in my opinion, university admissions. If someone can be admitted to a university, or some people should be admitted, pardon me, to a university's based on their academic achievements and their abilities in that direction. Their skin color should be the absolute last thing considered. And again, 30 years ago, that would have been the case. Now, not only not so much, but definitely not.
This really, I don't know what to make of this. What is going on in the United States in that, like, this just seems to me as another case for, I don't know, like, I don't want to come out with the term race war, per se, but the current administration has really driven yet another wedge within the otherwise cohesiveness of the races in the United States. We have the Mexicans on the whites, we have the blacks on the Mexicans, we have the whites on the Cuban, I don't know, whatever. It just seems there is such divisiveness because of skin color in the United States right now. Like, whatever happened to that speech, I have a Dream by Martin Luther King?
Well, exactly. And this is a problem that's you know, going on in the States, and it's going on in other parts of the world. You know, where all of this stuff is being dredged up by people who want power and people who want control, and they're using this in the most disgusting ways. This is, you could read some of this in Rules for Radicals. You know, it's meant to separate people out. It's a divide and conquer strategy, and in many cases, it's working, and it I think it is incumbent on us as people to just throw the race accusations back in their faces and to try and expose them for the race baiters that they are. I mean, if we continue, some very nasty stuff is going to happen. I'm sure you've heard of the city in Ukraine where leaflets were handed out by a pro-Russian organization, pro-Russian separatists, who want Jewish people to register, Jewish people over a certain age, to register with the city and include an accounting of their property. I mean, this, you know, I hate to, excuse me, quote the Heinz Gigolo, John Kerry, our Secretary of State.
Oh, yeah, he had the Heinz Gigolo. Perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, but he's right in this instance when he says this goes beyond unacceptable. This is now has now moved into grotesque, and this shouldn't be happening in 2014. This is the 21st bloody century.
I actually did a Google search on that when it came across my desk that people were asking to register, well, Jewish people in particular, of course, were asking themselves to register. And the Ukraine, I don't know if they were doing damage control, but they actually did come out and say, no, we're not doing that. So that is one story, though, I'm definitely looking into. But the thing is, Agador, is that don't put anything past anything when it comes to the Jewish peoples, and that they would do that. But I like you were quoting Rules for Radicals, and that is that's a book by Saul Alinsky, isn't it?
That's correct. And I'm going to make a short point here. And Kelly, you're beginning to break up, so you know we'll want to keep an eye on that. But this I also heard that Ukraine does have a long history of anti-Semitism. You know, going all the way back to when they aided the Nazis in World War II. So anti-Semitism is something that seems to go on in that particular area of Europe, and it's cropped up again, and it is so unnecessary. This, as I say, is people of power using these disgusting techniques to break us apart as people, and we should be uniting as people against things like, well, for instance, like your theme tonight, you know, halal and Islam, the very things that would destroy us. You know, this is why it's so important to get the word out so that we can move together as a people, regardless of color, and start to work on, you know, kicking these barbarians back to where they belong and taking back our civilizations and protecting them.
Yeah. And I'm just noticing I'm getting very suspicious clickings in my phone line. So what I think I'm going to do, Agador, is I'm going to take another break and try to get back here and see if I can't clear this up, because I can hear it. So, but Kath sent me a beautiful song that I wanted to play to commemorate Easter. Unfortunately, I couldn't download it due to copyright. But it was a beautiful song commemorating Easter, and the person got the copyrights from Leonard Cohen to do that. Wouldn't download, and I was told, no, you can't do that, copyright rules. So what I have here is the first best thing, and that is the actual song by Leonard Cohen. So what I'm going to do, folks, I'm going to play this song, and I'm going to hang up and come back in on another device, and we'll see you back here in 6 minutes.
I've been here before. I know this room. I walk this floor. I used to live alone before I knew you. Yeah, and I've seen your flag on the marble arch. But listen, love. Love is not some kind of victory march. No, it's a cold and it's ever a broken. Hallelujah. Hallelujah. did my best, it wasn't much. I couldn't feel it, so I learned to touch. I've told the truth, I didn't come all this way to fool you.
Everybody, and welcome back. Let me know if you can hear me. Can you hear me? Because I am on a completely different device right now and trying to turn up my volume so that you can hear me. I've been having issues with my carrier all week, and so tell me if you can hear me. Can you hear me out there? Hello? Can you hear me? Come on. Can you hear me? Sound 5x5. Ah, thanks, Kath. Okay. Yeah, where... And that was the closest I could come to the Easter song that I wanted to play. And, you know, the one that Kath sent to me. I really love that song. But due to copyright rules, it wouldn't let me download it. So I apologize for that, but we are back, and we have been talking about various issues, and we had been discussing what was going on in that Washington University, and I'm quite frankly, I'm flabbergasted by that. It doesn't have a whole... Paul, you be quiet. Pardon? What you what, Kel? You are such a bum. But, yeah, we were talking about, we talk about issues of Islam on the Red Fox blogger, but when Fly put this in the chat room, it really did draw my eye, and I recall reading this the other day, and that what happened, Agador, to American exceptionalism?
Well, it's been buried under the mire of statism and one worldism is where it's gone. It's been superseded by this. So, I mean, American exceptionalism is no longer accepted as something that's good. It's shown as us, the people of the United States, being bullies. And not accepting the fact that other countries can be great in their own right. And that's why President Obama went on the apology tour that he claims that he didn't go on.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just ridiculous. And I'm glad you got back, by the way, you know, because I don't really think the audience would have liked the Unpleasant Blind Guy tube sock shelf. That's what I was going to do. Come back. But, thank God we don't have to go through that. Yeah.
It would have been fun to see you try to close out by playing Fox on the Run. That would have been a treat.
Yeah, especially since I don't even have it. You know, I don't have the studio. I don't have anything. I just got a big mouth and a mic. But no, I'm, you know, no, it's exceptionalism. And I, you know, here's a prediction I'll make for you.
Okay.
This has been done here in the States by President Obama. I'm pretty sure that that's also going to be made in other Western countries. God, probably Cameron will do it next week. He'll play down, British exceptionalism, and talk about how other countries can be just as exceptional as the UK and things like that. I mean, you guys may get a break for a few years because you've got a decent PM. All right. But, look for it in other countries in the West as well. It was just the start of it here, and it was disgusting enough. Somehow, for some reason, and I believe that our president is not proud to be an American, and he's not going to be proud to be an American until he has completely changed our society into something completely antithetical to everything that most of us, in my opinion, believe it should be. So, just watch for that, and be mindful that this is also part of the deconstruction that has to take place before tyrants can take over. Individuals, for instance, cannot be exceptional. It all has to come to the state. Americans will remember the phrase, you didn't build that.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't build that. Somebody helped you build that. And it says that the state must be all. It must be the be-all and end-all. And they will use Islam to help them achieve that goal. And Islam will use them so that Sharia can be the replacement for our current cultures.
I don't, a lot of people go on about Obama saying, you didn't build that, and everybody was pretty much confounded by that. They really didn't understand what he meant by that, and I'm sorry, if you build it, it's yours, isn't it? I don't understand this. I don't understand what's going on in the United States. As you know, I am an outsider looking in, and when I come across these stories about people saying that our universities are too white and it's leading into a mediocrity, that frightens me. And listening to this person, Bruce Shepherd, say that in the decades ahead, should we be as white as we are today, we will be relentlessly driven towards mediocrity or become a sad shadow of our current self. That just leaves me flabbergasted.
Well, okay. The mediocrity that I see in academia, and this is all over the world again, is a mediocrity of thought. There is only one set of opinions that are allowed now on university campuses almost universally. And if you step outside of that and hold an opposing view, you're either shouted down or harassed or even in one case physically attacked or you're just shown the door. This man speaks of mediocrity, and yet he's at the bottom of the tank when it comes to something called groupthink. Thinking the same way is a kind of mediocrity, and it is dangerous, and it retards the growth of civilizations. He doesn't see that. He sees mediocrity as something else. He sees it as the color of people's skin. One of the things that just drives me nuts about academia. He doesn't understand academia is a place for exploration of ideas. And the minute you stop that and start concentrating on something else, then you invite in mediocrity. You invite it in, and you give it the spare bedroom and a place at the table.
You have to tolerate this president for another 2 years. You have the by-elections coming up in November. What do you think? I didn't expect to talk about American politics, but everybody knows that I am very much invested in talking about American politics, and that I listen to so many programs. I listen to these radio hosts. I listen to A12 Iggy Mom over there at the Halls of Valhalla, and I listen to, I don't listen to Bigfoot, but I read his blogs, and I can see the frustration in his writing. We have, like, Paul Alexander is in the UK, and they have their own issues, of course, and I, when I read his blogs, I see the frustration in his voice. We are so very frustrated by our Western governments and our administrations, but the United States in particular, of course, is very close to me. The UK and Canada, I tie together because I am a sovereign of the UK, so what happens in the UK, of course, happens to Canada. But what happens in the United States happens to the rest of us. So when I listen to these radio hosts, I can hear the frustration in their voices. And it all ties back to one administration, and that is the Obama administration. And that is, he has really created a wedge, and he is quite, personally, I think he's quite a dangerous person when it comes to the Constitution. I do not know what's going to happen. Like, we have the Tea Party. And ladies and gentlemen, please try to be in Washington, D.C. on May 6th and take your country back. But you have the by-elections coming up, like I say, this November. And what's your prediction for the House and the Senate? Are you going to get your country back via the House and the Senate?
Well, as I see it now, it's... You know, and I think, I don't know if Annie is still in the chat room, I don't, or whether she would agree with me, but it's going to take more than one election cycle. I think you're going to see a lot of people woken up. The House, it's not so much a matter of keeping it away from the Democratic Party, but in putting in more constitutionally minded people from the Republican Party to try and defeat people like John Boehner and individuals like that who are just a paler version of Democrats. So
yeah.
that is the goal in the U.S. House, and I don't know that we'll achieve that this time. But I think we will get a significantly larger number of constitutional conservatives in there than we've had previously. The Senate is in right now, just at the moment. I think it's anybody's guess. Either the Republicans will take the Senate back or they won't, and this will be the big thing. If they do, it's going to be interesting to see whether they act like the current House of Representatives and just rubber stamp President Obama's policies, or whether they actually grow a backbone and start to try and reverse some of the tyranny that is you know, poking its head up here in the States. That's how I see it.
Yeah. Well, are there any potential, like, I don't know. Obama has struck me as somebody, for example, who has totally externalized himself in that I think I'm concentrating particularly on his foreign policy, and that he has externalized himself to the point that he has made America look very weak on the world stage. And I'm just wondering... You talk about the election cycles, and I agree with that, is that this person has done so much damage. I don't know how much damage control can be done at this point. And you're right, it's going to take various election cycles. But is there somebody out there who can restore restore mm-hmm. Australia? Oh, you can tell I just love the show, say. But is there anybody out there that can restore the United States of America to her glory that she has established for so many years since the Constitution was written up? Are there candidates in your mind? I personally, there are some candidates that I truly admire. I really adore... There are so many that come to my mind. I did like Rand Paul, but a lot of people are very sour on him because of his father, Ron Paul. But I think Rand Paul has a bit of a vision. Of course, there are, gosh, like I say, so many run through my mind. Agador, help me out here. Like...
All right. Well, here's the problem that I think there is right now in the United States when it comes to candidates. Everyone's looking for another Ronald Reagan, and there was only one Reagan. We're not going to find here at this point stand by for a racist comment, a white knight that's going to ride in and fix everything. Exactly. Yeah, you know, I'll flagellate myself later. They told me I'd go blind if I did that, but I didn't pay attention. Anyway, it's up to us as a people to monitor our candidates. And people like Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz seems to be pretty good.
That was the one I was trying to think of. Ted Cruz.
Right.
The Canadian.
yeah. He seems to be pretty good, but. It's going to be up to us to look at voting records and monitor what these people do once they get in office, because there were people who ran in the 2010 election as Tea Party people, and they turned out not to be that. We're going to have to vet our candidates, and we're going to have to understand that it's not going to be up to the candidates per se to fix things. It's going to be up to us to make sure that they fix things. We just have to, there's a show over here called South Park, there was an episode where it was a school election, and the choices were for the school mascot, and you either had to pick between a douche and a poop sandwich.
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes that's the only choice you have. So we work with what's currently available, and the best thing is to hold their feet to the fire so that they will enact the things we want them to enact and stop some of the tyranny that's going on now and manage those candidates. And that's going to be a very hard thing to do. We can no longer just vote D if we're statist or R if we're conservative. That doesn't work anymore. We've seen that. So the task falls to us as a people to pick our candidates carefully.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I say, I'm heavily vested in what's going on in the UK, and Paul Alexander brought up a really good point. I wonder if we will ever have a true election as long as Obama can breathe. He has so many radical buddies that they do not go by the book and do whatever it takes for the Democrats to win. The last election was a big farce, and he got away with it. And I agree with Paul Alexander 100%, is that the last election was a big farce. There of course, was the issue of the voting fraud, and there was the issue of the soldiers overseas and that their votes were not counted.
Right. And this is something that, I have no absolute proof of this, and none of the rest of us do, and that's part of the problem.
Yeah.
But we felt in 2012 that President Obama was going to be toppled. Now Romney wouldn't have been much better, but it would have at least been slower death, and we might have had at least a little more success in holding his feet to the fire. It's not anything I can prove, but there was definitely a feeling over here on Election Day in 2012 that people wanted to get rid of Obama and put, someone else in, almost, ABO, anybody but Obama. And I really do believe that, knowing what I do about computers, that votes were manipulated in just the right number of states that send in just the right number of electors to allow President Obama to have a creditable win. He had what I would call a Clintonian victory, which was a win by around 10-15% or less. Certainly not a landslide, but a creditable win, the same kind of win that, for instance, President Bush had in 2004.
I think that what we're going to see this November is going to be a watershed by-election. I'm on tenterhooks to see what happens. In particular, we can't do anything about Obama until 2016, but in 2014, we can certainly make a difference within the House and the Senate. We've just got to get the people in there, but it's unfortunate that A12 Iggy Mama in the chat room brings up a really good point in which she says that Cruz is an awesome congressman, but he is not able to be president nor vice president, and she's right, because his, despite the fact that he was born in Alberta, Canada, he would still be an American citizen because his parents were there on work visas, for example, but his father is Cuban.
Well, if his father was a naturalized American citizen, and I believe that he was, I think that it can be legally argued that Cruz is an American, especially if they retained their American citizenship while they were in Canada on work visa.
Yeah.
It's a little bit fiddly on a legal standpoint, but frankly, I think that's every bit as good as President Obama's birth certificate and all of that. And God, I do not want to get into that whole birther thing.
Nor do I.
But I think that it can be legally argued that it's creditable that Ted Cruz is an American citizen. And I'm sure, I know that if they thought that he had a chance to win, they would really try and challenge that. But I honestly think that they would lose. The only way I think that they could win would be if they once again intimidated our Supreme Court, if it ever made it that far.
That would be fascinating. Now that would be something that would have me on the edge of my seat if something like that developed.
Oh yeah, yeah. I think that would certainly have the United States on the edge of its seat because. We all know that in 2016 it's going to be Slick Hilly, and I don't know who her running mate is going to be, but you know I've been saying it's probably going to be I want to say
Chris Christie.
Well, I don't think it's going to be him, but I think she might pick Castro. I cannot remember his first name now. The mayor of San Antonio.
Oh yeah.
I think she might pick him. And on the Republican side, it's probably, it's probably going to be someone like a Jeb Bush or someone like that.
Yeah, Julian Castro, rather. Yeah.
Yeah, Julian Castro. Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. It's going to be something like that. The Republicans will try and bring up some kind of quote unquote ethnic candidate. But it's probably going to be a party man that's not going to be appealing to people, and this is the danger that I think there is. I think they'll bring someone like that up, and a lot of people will stay home because, especially if it's someone like Jeb Bush, I think people are just going to go, "Are you kidding me?"
Yeah, and I love what Bigfoot just said in the chat room, Hillary versus Jeb, watch, none of the above win. Yeah, he's absolutely right. Like, the last thing I want to see is Jeb Bush being touted as running for the GOP. No way. No, 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 no. Big, bad move. And Bigfoot is right. If it comes down to that, believe me, we're looking at a third world order.
Oh yeah. I mean, I think what we're looking at, if it comes down to that, is Hillary, Hillary Clinton winning, because so many conservatives will just stay home and say there's no one for us to vote for. I mean, at that point, I'd almost rather see someone like Governor Palin run as a third candidate, maybe not a third party candidate, but as a third candidate, someone like her my God. I mean, at that point, even though I do have some issues with his foreign policy stances, at that point I'd even seriously consider Rand Paul.
Rand Paul is looking bloody good right now, like really good. Like when you think, and what Vorpalbite said as well in the chat room is that Republicans will offer a straw man candidate, and I have to agree with him. Like I'm terrified that he's right.
Oh, no, no. I think I, that's what I said. I think they'll offer that, and it'll be generic, and it'll probably be ethnic. You know, it'll probably be a Hispanic. Maybe they'll find a black guy. Who knows?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But it'll be someone dressed in the same blue suit, espousing the same stuff that Republicans have been espousing for the past 30 years and haven't believed in since about 1995. I'm talking about the establishment Republicans. And a majority of conservatives here in the States and libertarians are just going to look at that and go, ew. And they'll stay home.
Yeah. I want to pick this up with you down the road because, like I say, I've been flying by the seat of my pants doing this show because I have been thrown more times than a crash test dummy doll with my internet and with my landline and stuff. So my game has been thrown off a little bit. But one thing I do appreciate, Agador, I want to thank you so very much for sitting with me tonight, because if it weren't for you, I probably would have just hung up the show out of frustration. It has just been absolute maddening. People listen, when you listen to the beginning of the my show, you're going to hear that I was rather manic, and that's only because I was totally thrown off my game when I was producing for EDL Radio with Jeff Mitchell, and it happened again to me tonight. I'm very unhappy with the service I'm getting. This has nothing to do with Blog Talk Radio. This has everything to do with my Rogers network server. But one thing that is a saving grace is that Agador joined me tonight. It's been a wonderful, wonderful conversation, and please come back.
I love it, Kel. You always do a fantastic job on your shows, and as much as you think you fall, you pick it up with grace. You did that tonight on the EDL show. I know you think you didn't, but from a listener's perspective, I thought you did fantastically well. I can't quite see the people in the chat room now because I'm just that far enough away from the screen, but I'm sure they agree with me. You've been doing a great job in the face of adversity. I don't really think anyone could have done any better, and I want to thank you for having me on. You know, I didn't expect it, I'm always glad to be on with you. I'm always glad to be on with people from the EDL. I'm always glad to be on with anyone who is patriotic and who is defending civilization against, as you put it, the scourge of Islam. And I just want to say again that I appreciate everybody in the chat box. Love to our sweet Sue. And
absolutely.
Thank you, Kel.
And I spoke with Sweet Sue the other day, and she was at the other hospital. She was taken to another hospital in which she was given tests. I tried to call her earlier today, and she was up and about, which is a good sign. So amen for that. Sweet Sue from New Mexico, I tweet you the shows like you asked me to do, and I hope that you can listen and archive and know that we love you so very much, and please get well soon, because you mean the world to us, eh, Agador?
Absolutely. Absolutely she does, and, you're never far from our thoughts and prayers, Sue, so, we're definitely with you. You know, the hand of God works through all of us, even for people like me who don't work as hard at their religion as maybe they ought to.
You've got it, Agador. Hey, I'll be talking with you probably throughout the week so that we can come up with spiders to tease Jeff with.
Oh, I've got one I'm holding back, so he'll love it.
Okay. Agador, once again, thank you so very much. Have a wonderful evening. I'll probably see you at Reactionary's place in a few moments.
You bet, Kel. Thank you. You have a wonderful evening. And as the EDL says, no surrender. No surrender ever.
No surrender ever.
Absolutely. All right.
And ladies and gentlemen, I really want to thank you for joining me on the RFB radio show tonight. We were discussing the Easter, Passover, Resurrection, and Halal. And we were discussing American politics, which you know I am fascinated with. But we really do appreciate you all being here. We appreciate all of you in Archive and Agador and myself. We appreciate your input in the chat room. Ladies and gentlemen, I will see you back here Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, of course, with my co-host, Tim Burton. And, of course, Tim and myself, we always see you at Radio Jihad Network on Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. But you also see us at EDL Radio with Jeff Mitchell Thursdays, Fridays, and Sundays at 3:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, have a great night. Have a great weekend. Happy Easter and a happy resurrection. And remember, though, it is mass Islamity. We've got to stop the insanity. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.